This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. There's an old joke about scientists finding yet another substance that causes cancer in laboratory mice. And the joke goes, the punchline of the joke is, well, maybe the mice are getting cancer from the fluorescent lights in the laboratory because it seems like everything causes cancer. Well, just a few days ago, my next guest wrote a piece on the website sciencebasedmedicine.com under the title, Everything Causes Cancer. After reading it, I called him and said, come on the show and explain what this means. This is Dr. Stephen Novella, who is a clinical neurologist at the Yale University School of Medicine and the founder and executive editor of sciencebasedmedicine.com. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to America Weekend.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. What do you mean everything causes cancer? Really?
Well, no. I mean, the title was sarcastic. I mean, the notion is that if you look at the research, this is based on reviewing a study which showed that about 80% of ingredients in an average cookbook, if you look at the literature, there is some study showing that it either causes cancer or it decreases the risk of cancer, that pretty much everything you eat has some influence on your risk of cancer. And the article was questioning, my article was, well, how reliable, how useful really is this data? If everything seems to cause cancer, maybe we just shouldn't worry about it. Maybe it's just life.
Maybe it is. You say in there, my usual response when I'm offering advice on this is, look, food is healthy for you. Eat food. It's full of nutrition. If you don't eat it, your health will dramatically suffer. Just don't eat too much. And that's really the bottom line here. We shouldn't worry so much about all these reports we're getting on what seems to be almost a weekly basis.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at any food ingredient, any nutrient, and you study it, you'll find out that it's good for you, that our body uses these nutrients and there's some health advantage to it. Of course there is. But people turn that into, the nutraceutical kind of notion that, well, that therefore means if you eat a lot of this thing, you'll be healthy, you'll live forever, it'll cure or prevent disease. But it's just the fact that, food is nutrition. Of course it's all good for you. And if you eat anything to excess, it's going to be harmful. After decades of research, what these researchers also found is that on the average, if you looked at all the research that they systematically reviewed, on average, the net effect was zero. Some foods increased the risk a little bit of cancer. Some foods decreased the risk a little bit of cancer, and the net effect was zero, which you can interpret one of two ways. It's possible that this is just all noise in the research, that these effects aren't real. It's just a random scatter of results that you expect, and it all averages out to nothing. Or that there's maybe a little bit of an effect one way or the other with certain foods, but again, this is with pretty much every ingredient that you're going to find. You would drive yourself crazy if you tried to nail down every single ingredient in every single thing you eat and worry about its health effects, when you're better off following really simple rules like don't eat to excess, eat a generally varied diet, make sure you eat your vegetables like your mother told you. If you do those basic things, that's not going to be any different than wasting your life obsessing over tiny details that are really not supported by the research.
All right. Now, I'm curious, as a scientist, how you feel about seeing these things reported and published so often. Aren't there standards for publishing results of research? Isn't there peer review?
So, that's a very good question. And when you say published and reported are two different things. Let me address them separately. So I do agree that we need to set a higher standard for publication, that there are some problems with the studies that are getting published. It's okay to do and publish what we call preliminary studies. The point of preliminary studies is to show us if there's any potential in that research question. Does it deserve the full resources of a large, rigorous trial or not? But unfortunately, the literature is kind of filling up with these preliminary, not very rigorous studies, and we aren't doing enough of the high-quality studies or the replications that we need to do in order to see if these preliminary results are reliable. You couple this with the problem that the media, now especially with the internet, you can just pull the news feeds right off of an RSS feed, and the media is reporting all of these preliminary studies as if they're definitive research studies. And so the internet is just full of misinformation, mainly derived from these preliminary studies, which really should only be of interest to other researchers who are looking to see what research questions are worth investing in.
You know what I think we may be suffering from here, Stephen? Positive bias, both at the media level and perhaps by some of the research as well. The media sees a story about, oh, this causes cancer. You know, oh, cranberries cause cancer. That's going to be our story for today in our health segment. We're always looking for things for our health segment. That'll be today's. But isn't it also possible there's some positive bias going on by the people who are doing this research? They said, okay, we believe that cancer's that cranberries cause cancer or bananas make you smarter or whatever it is. And so they get some confirmation bias in the way?
No, you're absolutely correct. It's clearly demonstrated. It's been clearly demonstrated that there is positive researcher bias. And that is why you need to have independent replication. Other scientists completely independent from you with an independent set of data to see, is this effect real? Not only is there researcher bias, there's publication bias. Researchers are more likely to submit their studies for publication if the results are positive and interesting. And journal editors are more likely to publish studies that are interesting. They want what's called impact factor. Impact factor comes from new findings. So either you're showing that something entirely new is effective or something that we're already using is not effective. You're reversing our thinking in some way. That gives you impact factor. So there's this selection bias all the way down the line, even before it gets to the media. Then, of course, the media, they have their own impact bias, so they want the headlines. And then the headlines even distort the data itself further. So by the time the public is reading headlines, it's been filtered through multiple layers of bias in the direction of the new and extreme claims, which are the ones that are most likely to be untrue.
I'm laughing at this because I'm thinking somewhere in the world there is some researcher who has discovered that kumquats do nothing. They don't do anything. But you can't publish a newspaper that say kumquats do nothing because nobody's going to read it and nobody's going to care.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Now, speaking of things that do nothing, I've got to ask you about something else that science-based medicine has done, which is a series of e-books. And several of them are about things like acupuncture and chiropractic, and particularly homeopathy. This is a topic I've discussed a couple of times before on this show, and I continue to be shocked that companies like Walgreens and CVS and the largest pharmaceutical outlets in this country continue to put homeopathic remedies on the shelves right next to real medicine that actually does work. Is there any chance, do you think, in our near future of changing that?
Well, we are moving in the right direction in some ways, I think. It's not going to be a near future thing. I think this is going to have to take a long campaign. So very quickly, homeopathic remedies, most of them are diluted to the point where no active ingredient remains. You literally are left with pure water on a sugar pill. It's a literal placebo, no effect. And decades of clinical research have shown that there isn't a single homeopathic remedy that works for anything. So we know they can't possibly work, and in fact, they don't work. And whenever anybody has systematically reviewed this evidence, that is the unavoidable conclusion that they come to. However, most Western industrialized nations, they certify, they license, they legitimize homeopathic treatments. Homeopathic treatments are approved by the FDA automatically because of a law that was passed in the 1950s, pushed through by a senator who was a homeopath. And we're stuck with this law for decades. And of course, now, so you talk about the drugstores like Walgreens or whatever, all they know is that people want to buy them. You know, when you ask them, they say, this is what our customers want. You know, it's not really their job to be regulating medicine, although they then say that they stand by their products, and that's where there's the cognitive dissonance, right? That's where there's the disconnect. Well, if you stand by your products, why are you selling sugar water as if it were real medicine? And sometimes you can embarrass them into taking steps in the right direction, but there needs to be a public awareness campaign about what homeopathy actually is. Most people in the public don't know what it is. They think it's just natural remedies or herbal remedies. They don't realize it's a scam. It's a completely worthless sugar pill. And I think the more we increase the awareness of what homeopathy actually is, we can keep the pressure up on the regulators to start to make some rational decisions.
Absolutely. It is hard to hold back the tide of pseudoscience that is out there. But Stephen and his website, sciencebasedmedicine.com, and also his podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which is one of the most popular science podcasts on the internet, are doing that. Dr. Stephen Novella of the Yale University School of Medicine, thanks for joining me here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Networks. America.